Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Starting to warm up now. Very happy. Even though I'm bundled up, it's not bad out here. All right. Hope you guys are doing well, wherever you are in this planet. So a friend of mine, every time I have a conversation with her, she will say, the world is run by psychopaths. Or she'll say something like, I can't believe the world is run by psychopaths. And what's interesting is I don't usually use that word in my mind, but I agree with it every time she says it. I was watching Westworld, the new season 3, which in my opinion is another 10. It's very detailed, but it is, I think this won't be an major spoiling alert. If you know anything about Westworld, if you watch the first 5 minutes of it, you know that there are these sort of android humans, which are called hosts. And then there are real humans that go visit the hosts. And first season was all about the drama going down inside the Westworld. In season 3, there's a different thing happening where the hosts are off on a mission. Let's just put it that way. This won't ruin anything for you at all. And it's starting to turn into a beautifully detailed Blade Runner where, I mean, this is my pitch to you to watch season 3. Because there was a line spoken, I think, in episode 5 today, which is catalyzing my mind for this episode, believe it or not. In Blade Runner, we saw 4 replicants, which were androids. 4 replicants that were coming back to Earth to find their maker, who was Dr. Terrell. And we saw them engaging in various activities, trying to get closer and closer to this man. But we never really heard much of the dialogue between the two of them and how they were thinking. There was a little bit of Roy and Leon, because Leon was supposed to go back to his apartment and grab his pictures. Then there was a recap from Roy to Pris at Sebastian's apartment. You heard a couple lines there, but the rest was all assumed. Well, I guess they were thinking this. I guess they were going to do that. And so one of the cool things about Westworld season 3 is that we are seeing a much more detailed version of Blade Runner in a very polite way. And we're getting to hear and see the rationale of very sophisticated hosts discuss things. Now, we'll see that season 3 is not something you're just going to be able to sit down and mess around in your front room and get the show. You need to put everything down and watch it. I'm watching every episode 3 times because I have 3 collections of friends. Actually, sorry, 2 collections of friends, and I typically watch it once by myself. In this episode I saw this evening, there's a character, which I'll let you discover, who is lecturing another person about the sort of the generalization and the summation of mankind. One of the things that they talk about, which I've mentioned in several shows, is that they mentioned the loops. A loop is simply us getting up in the morning, doing a ritual, going back to bed, then getting up in the morning and doing it again. We know we all do it. We know we do that particular loopy thing. But the beautiful writing in this season, and the kid from Breaking Bad's in it, and I think it's one of his best roles he's ever done. He's really just, he's able to be a whole new character I've never seen before, and I just think he's knocking it out of the park. It's great. But this character in his lecture said, mankind isn't worth keeping around because mankind continually repeats history in a bad way. It's as if mankind cannot learn anything from history, so he keeps doing it over and over and over again. And that's sort of the foundation of this episode. My friend is right. And we've talked about this several times. By the way, I'm smoking a Rocky Patel Decade Box Press. What's very interesting, and it's interesting because as you study history, you will find psychopaths all over history, right? The predominant ones that are taught to us as kids is any psychopath that argue with our psychopaths, right? So if you're in England, it would be any country that argued with your leaders. If you're in France, Germany, etc. For America, you know, it was, World War I is just a mess for the history books. And I will tell you that when schools were better in the United States, they still did not teach us World War I in school. They taught you it happened, but they didn't teach you anything about why we were there, because they probably couldn't figure it out. You know, they couldn't figure out a good reason for kids to latch on to. With World War II, we had a much thicker storyline, Hitler, Pearl Harbor against the Japanese. So it's pretty easy to get behind it. North Korean War, not taught at all. Vietnam War, sort of acknowledged, but never in any detail because we shouldn't have been there and we didn't exactly win the war, right? So that's what you get out of like basic history in the United States when the schools were good. Now, I didn't go to college to get history classes, so I don't know if that got it. I'm sure we got much, much better. And I studied like the Middle Ages and, my own personal travels. I studied, Egyptology. And of course, we've talked about a lot of things on the show. Unimportant right now. But when you grow up, you learn about people like Henry Kissinger. These weird individuals who have an arrogance that is unbelievable. But what's interesting about these folks, and I would say, Kissinger's more of a sociopath, in my opinion, who believes that he is obviously way above you intellectually and probably educationally speaking. In his prime, Kissinger is nothing to shake a stick at. I mean, their IQs are off the chain. We have to give them that. And if you underestimate their IQ, you lose. Cheney's IQ, huge. Donald Rumsfeld IQ, huge. These architects, they're something else, man. Now, there are folks that get famous that don't have necessarily massive IQs, but they come from families that have control. And there's where you get the psychopaths. The psychopaths use the sociopaths, the genius sociopaths, to help them figure out what to do. But this character in Westworld saying that sort of reminded me of the classic problem. We repeat history. Here's what I really, really, really don't like about anyone insulting the human race. We know that education is the way to get the human race on the same page, all become loving individuals, craft destinies. I mean, we should be nothing more than a planet of artistic expression. You know, if we learned that there were alien forces visiting Earth and some mean us harm, and there's a need to become defensive against that, or maybe even offensive about it, then that's a whole different conversation. But as long as we are where we are, and there are no other players outside of ourselves, then we should be able to obliterate war. Because every single crazy psychopathic person, like Genghis Khan, Adolf Hitler, Mao, Stalin, I mean, these people that are, I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, I would bore you to death listing out the names, but these people that have super power hungry appetites and philosophies that they get when they're really, really young. Remember the CERN Hadron Collider? One of the biggest problems with that project is that the theories that designed it were conceived in the 60s, and we've come so far since the 60s to be looking for the Big Bang as a huge joke. It didn't happen. So don't build a 30 billion euro machine for looking at imaginary things, which begs most intelligent people to go, they're looking for something else. They're doing something else. But don't put it past them to be that ignorant. the ruling class of this world keep us ignorant. They really, really do. They keep us in the dark and feed us bullshit, right? Just like a mushroom. So when someone says, let's just say you're in a more modern sector of the world and you see slums in some country, like that, the toughest one to see when you're in a first world country is the third world countries. And believe me, they're almost of all races, I would say. And I only say almost because I don't know the absolute fact as I'm sitting here talking to you. But there's regions of the world where, one, they live on the most lush, beautiful land Earth has created. And instead of embracing that, they throw all their trash into a river. And when I say all their trash, you guys have seen it. Metric tons of trash to the point where the rivers are full of trash, like probably 2 or 3 feet deep. If you fall into it, you typically drown because the trash buries you. How can that be? Right? How can that be anywhere in the world? Every country has billions of dollars. Every country has billions of dollars. Even the most desolate, remote countries will have the equivalent of $1 billion in their currency. But the psychopaths eat it all up, don't they? There's this big hoorah today. My today was the 14th yesterday, because it's the 15th. It's the morning of the 15th right now. I've been watching, you know, the thing is that Trump decided to defund us out of the globalist association with the World Health Organization, which is the best news you have ever heard in your life. If you know anything about these ridiculous organizations, we give them $500 million a year. China gives them $40 million a year. But what do you need $500 million for, World Health Organization? If there's no pandemic, they're doing nothing. And let me give you an example. As you know, I've been watching tons of documentaries lately, even before the lock-in thing, which is not changing my life at all. I mean, at all. I have seen textile factories in Indonesia polluting the water with absolutely lethal amounts of all kinds of ridiculous chemicals. I have seen, you know, there's a series on TV called Trashopolis. The amount of waste products we're creating is ridiculous. I'm watching a series that goes through all of the countries in Africa where communities are trying to grow the most lucrative product, and they find out that whatever they're lured into isn't lucrative. People burning electronics to get at the copper and wires, and they're sitting there smelling it all. People digging for tin and then having to use mercury to push it all together. People digging for gold, and they're smelling mercury fumes. And I mean, there is a catastrophe in every third world country. You know, India, where you're supposed to outsource all your programming, they have the slum dogs. I mean, the slums of India, and then they have the trash problem. Haiti has the trash problem. Countries in South America have the trash problem. Countries in South America right now, like Venezuela and Brazil, they're suffering horribly for things that all that needs to happen is the World Health Organization, if it truly gave a crap about any of us, would go to these countries and say, look, what do you need to fix this stuff? You got to get those textile companies to filter their water before you throw it into the river. People are bathing in that. People are using it for drinking water. Look at all the deformed children and mentally ill children because of what you're doing. And there's one textile company in Indonesia that actually filtered their waters. This old guy that works for them, he's just like this genius who just said, yeah, it's easy to filter water. And he actually poured some of it out and drank it right on camera. But it's because this is all a game. Us repeating history is due to them. Well, excuse me, let's rewind. It's due to us allowing them to be bigger than us in our minds. Someone being addicted to being told what to do. Thinking for yourself, I don't know what the deal is. You know, it's almost like that. when Steve Jobs was interviewed, I believe in 1994, on a sofa, and he was asked about Bill Gates, and he said, he says, well, you're either born with style or you're not. And Bill Gates was not born with it. So, man, that was an understatement. So I believe that thinking for yourself isn't something you're either born with or not born with, but we do have to teach it. And because the world is so broken, these boom and bust cycles that they create, they just created one. They're going to try and spin this whole corona thing into the worst recession we've had since the Depression. The IMF came out and just simply said, and if anyone allows their words to become reality in their life, then we're doing it all over again. We're about to repeat history. So I am talking about in this episode sort of a problem that is so massive that it's like my old analogy that I've given to you guys several times, which is when I used to work on giant projects, either by myself or at work or both at the same time, I had to give myself a mind trick, an analogy in my brain to explain how I was going to get up every day and do the same thing over again, especially when you're working for yourself. You know, when I told you guys when I was about 23, I started developing a product that I finished when I was 24, and I sold to a bunch of Fortune 1000 companies. And it was a very complex project. And just my manila pad, you know, that had all the things that I had to do, all the features that I had to add, and then all the bugs that I had found, like two different sections. It was 8 pages. And I had to, you know, wake up every day and kill them and kill the bugs and make the features. And then because I make everything, you know, as clean and as perfect as possible. I mean, my interfaces are massaged to a level that it's like, wow, this is so easy and it does so much. I love that feeling. But when you look into my code, it also makes a coder have sexual feelings because they're like, oh, this is so clean, man. You know, there's no crap in this thing. Okay. So my analogy to myself I made up during that phase was chopping down a redwood tree with a hatchet. Now, no one should chop down redwood trees. The wood isn't good for anything. This problem is sort of like that. It is so large and so multidimensional that we have to have the courage to have a really good conversation about it and not just say, well, you know, everybody's kept retarded and therefore history repeats itself. And okay, you know, if we were to agree, just those of you listening to me, that this is an issue, that education is a big giant issue, then what we have to do is, in my opinion, because we don't believe this works, but it does work, we have to spread the conversation with very good touch points, with an actual feeling of a beginning, middle, and end to the problem, such that someone else hearing us doesn't hear the hopelessness or doesn't get to a point of hopelessness in trying to address the issue. Let's review what education can fix in this world. I mean, like a full-blown education. I can tell you right now, K through 12 can save a lot of lives. Even K through 8 can save a lot of lives. Remember, in the 1800s in America, your average person had an eighth grade education. And it wasn't that they had stopped being educated. It's just that's how far the schools went. And so they'd stop. And they go off and become inventors. The amount of people without formal educations that have created amazing things is a lot more than you would think. And of course, those with advanced educations will also blow you away by what they create. So, you know, we've got a few issues here, right? We have first world countries that actually have access, although expensive, education. Now, with YouTube and the internet, I don't know why anyone isn't a rocket scientist if that's what they want to be, because I'm telling you, everything is out there. everything is out there. And, you know, just give you an idea, just a quick, a little analogy. You know, I'm taking my 3D skills to the next level through this quarantining phase. And I bought 4 courses from 4 professionals that made beautiful courses. And they are above and beyond most free courses. Plus, they're super duper professionals. And so when you're listening to them, they actually have the job that you want. And that's what I typically do, is listen to people that have the jobs that I want. You know, I take from them what I like. But I go on YouTube when I don't have a very specific thing that's covered in any of my courses, and there's the video right there. Maybe at worst I have to listen to someone with thick accent, maybe. Even if they're speaking in a completely different language and it isn't translated, you can just mute it and watch where the cursor goes, right? And watch where the mouse goes, and you're like, oh, okay, that's the modifier I use. That's how I work the physics engine or whatever. But population control, for instance, is something that is being used against us. Again, from my experiences, in terms of listening to friends of mine who have literally presented to Rothschilds personally, it is something that they truly believe is a problem. Again, the world's not currently suffering a population problem. They're concerned about the curve, which is skyrocketing straight up. And there are, you know, different elements to population growth. If you have a poor society that can't support their current population, then any increase in that population is going to be unquestionably a bad thing for them. It's going to increase poverty for them. For countries, for other countries, they are literally trying to take over the world through population growth. With a defense mechanism, if you recognize the fact that they are trying to take over the world and snatch the whole place up, then you're a racist, and they use the race card to prevent you from criticizing their silent war against the rest of humanity. All right? And then, as just sort of a blanket theory, we do have to control how many people we put on this planet. Just go look at the 405 on a Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, and you will realize we've got too many people for the infrastructure that we have. Infrastructure takes a really long time to design, implement, pay for. And so it'd be really nice if it was more like, you know, 85 instead of 2020. So we know that education, in terms of giving someone a career path, starts as soon as your kid can recognize spoken language, whatever language you natively speak. As soon as the kid gets the question, well, what are you going to be when you grow up? And they're like, whoa, well, you're asking me an adult question, because that's what that question is. I'm asking you to tell me what you're going to do when you become an adult, and the kid's 5 years old. So the only thing that they answer with are options that have been presented to them. Again, when I was a little kid, the funny thing was, you were either going to be like a boy would be a doctor or a fireman or whatever. A woman, I think the answers were like a nurse or something like that, kind of remedial. But those were concepts the kids could understand. It wasn't like that was a limitation. But obviously, education will give someone a destiny. And once they have a destiny, then everything else is pitted against the destiny. Now, there's a little bit of narcissism that can happen there, and you can be a bad parent or whatever. Education is a part of that solution as well. But overall, it gets a female to think about, how many kids can I have and still have this destiny of mine, meaning hers, to realize? Because if you think about it, as I've told you, you know, in the simulations we did in video games, men typically could run away from getting someone pregnant, and that is reprehensible behavior. The woman can't run away. It's inside of her. And she develops bonds, typically. But out of all of the videos that I have seen, and there are just so many videos of, you know, third world countries, you really should watch some of these to really get a good global view of how the world works. You don't have to listen to the narration of the documentary as much, because they're definitely traveling with biases at times. There's a lot of global warming, climate change crap in there. but it'll give you a sense of, you know, where to point education. And the thing is that for those of us in first world countries, what are you going to do? You know, you may think, okay, I want to support education in these third world countries, but how are you going to do it? It's very, very difficult because it's going to take a tremendous amount of money. These teachers have to speak at least two languages. And you know, if you're in America, learning how to speak some local, say, Ugandan language or what have you, they do speak French a lot of times, and they all have a little bit of broken English at one point. But to be a teacher, you're going to have to, you know, communicate in their native tongue. But all of this is just sort of anecdotal because it is, it seems insurmountable at one point. But now let me, so that was a manual way of fixing the problem, which will work, which is for us to somehow subsidize education towards the third world countries that are struggling, or countries like Brazil that were doing fine and now they're doing horrible. Venezuela was doing fine, now it's doing horrible. India, I don't see an excuse why they can't provide more than 12 bathrooms in a city with 10 million people. I mean, they've got horrendous problems that are super easy to solve. Like, the biggest cities in India have restroom problems. Well, how hard is a restroom, man? You know, can you get a pipe to move water? Well, then we can move poop through a pipe. But for whatever reason, you know, there have to be some sort of corrupt elements at the top of government not to fund this stuff. They don't even pass laws about polluting the world. I mean, it's their world. It's not our world. Okay. So that one's very meticulous, very tough. Now, let me ask you this question. If we could truly spread the realization that psychopaths are the ones that gravitate towards government positions and corporate positions and banking positions, and we could get that understood, and we could get it to stop, which is a big, big order. Because who's going to fill the position? Now, some industries simply shouldn't exist. Banking should have never been allowed to be a private for profit situation, because like all things in most first world countries, if the resource that you are consuming is a strategic resource, water, food, electricity, heating, money, then it has to be regulated in a very special way. There can't be ridiculous profit. There can't. There shouldn't be any profit. This is what you have to do to store your calorie energy that you expel into monetary units such that you can get the other strategic resources and pay for them. Now, things cost money to make. Food costs money to make. Water costs money to purify. Electricity costs money to generate. Again, if Tesla was around, we could at least erase electricity off there. But even Tesla's infrastructure would have cost money, and it's going to cost maintenance, right? You build a bunch of these Tesla towers around the world. Well, you have to build them. They're very delicate, you know, mechanical devices or electronic devices. And then, you know, tornado comes by and knocks out some of the repeater antennas to move the electricity from one point to the other. You got to fix it. So not everything's completely free, but it's a hell of a lot cheaper than we're paying for right now. Just the fact that we have, you know, gasoline is a strategic resource for the United States of America. But because the oil industry owns the power of every fiat currency, you're not allowed to tell them anything. Gas in Tennessee right now, I believe, is $1.30 a gallon, which is, I mean, God, that is like as cheap as when I moved to California 33 years ago. In fact, I think we hit $2 within the first 3 years I was here. Okay, well, that same gasoline in a normal economy without the lockdown, without Donald Trump as president, would run $5 a gallon in Santa Monica, California. Why? Because the oil industry knows that Santa Monica has a lot of money and that no one will complain. But you know what's kind of ridiculous, or completely ridiculous, is that that oil is actually refined in California. and has a shorter distance to travel to go from the refineries to the pumps in Santa Monica. It costs a shit ton of money to deliver 1,800 miles inland to put in that tank, probably more than that, 2,000 miles in Tennessee. And it sells for cheaper. Psychopaths run the world. Psychopaths get what they want because they gravitate to the positions. If we could ever drain the swamps in every industry, first your politicians, but you really have to pay attention to what the Rothschilds said in the 1800s. The beautiful thing about the Rothschilds is they got so arrogant in the 1800s, they talked a lot. They told us how much money they had. They told us how they do their operations, which is, if I control the money, I care not who casts a vote because I'll control who you vote for. Okay. We have to annihilate the banking cartel by outlawing banks from being private for profit devices. It's not like healthcare, right? Healthcare requires a tremendous apparatus of, you know, cooperating bodies. Imagine just getting a regular surgery. How many people have to be in that room who have disciplines up to PhD levels or close to tend to your body as you're being put under by the anesthesiologist, the surgeon that's going in, the second surgeon going in, the nurses that are helping the surgeons. It's a very detailed thing, and you have to be very careful with that going into the government sector, because traditionally, and I don't know why, I think it's because the pay rates are so low, we don't get top-end professionals in government positions. Now, when I worked for the college here locally, it was repulsive how the employees, some employees, I should say, behave on a daily basis. When the bell rang at 5 o'clock, there was no bell, but when it became 5 o'clock, all the employees disappeared. There was no concept of working harder to get something done. It was so bad that if I was at my desk as a contractor and only went in there, you know, about 3 days a week tops, and I went to the restroom because I didn't have the key to the front door, I would have to time it. You know, I was like, oh my God, I can't be in there at 5 o'clock because I'll come back and all my stuff's locked away and everyone's gone. I mean, everyone. I was in an office with probably 20 people, all 20 people gone. The place shut down. And that's not necessarily in the world, but that gives you an idea of how inflexible government, you know, run bodies are. But a banking system should be largely computerized for one thing. And so you just need tellers here and there. Again, you're handling all the money of your country. There should be no problem providing decent salaries for tellers and bank managers and whatever, but they're going to be answering to the state or the city, the federal government, not the state, to make sure that when you borrow money, there's a fee for borrowing money, but not this compound interest thing, right? Now, I don't know about every other country's mechanisms and infrastructure for how your money system is created and distributed. I assume it's very close to the United States if you're using fiat currency, which is like sort of a byproduct of the World Bank, right? But the Rothschilds said that little statement by controlling the money, and they control the world. So if we were to take back, and there's this big rumor that we've done it, but if we take back the control of the Federal Reserve, dissolve it, replace their notes with treasury notes, back it by gold, then who can manipulate us anymore? Banks in Europe? Maybe. What are you going to do? Sit in New York City and deal in euros all day long? I think someone would notice that you don't have any real cash. All these investment banking houses, which are awarded freshly created money that then are distributed to corporations via stock purchases to keep their evil corporations on top, and you can't create any competing business down below, would be erased eventually. If you can't find them in direct crimes to then immediately shut them down. So imagine us taking control of our own money. And all that shady shit that they do, you just put one lawsuit on them after another in such a way that you lock up all their money on the first day of the indictment. Well, we'll see. We'll see where your money goes after this court case is over. But all of your personal assets, as relates to the company, are all frozen. Maybe even some of the, you know, veiled leadership, meaning they're behind the corporate veil. I mean, they their own boats and houses and mansions and things are protected up to a point. But when you behave in such a corrupt way, the court has a way of piercing the corporate veil, and they could seize a CEO's entire estate. The idea that there are big, giant investment firms is sort of ridiculous. Big, giant companies that decide who wins and who fails. Well, now, if you were to revise banking by making your own treasury sovereign note, then they wouldn't have this ultimate relationship with the bankers anymore. Your politicians that are serving the deep state, because that money is power, and you can buy anyone off, well, that just ends. It just ends. Sure, they could get a bunch of euros transferred for a little while, but as long as the conversion between a fiat currency and a real currency is extremely tough, well, one, it's really trackable too. That's the other beautiful thing. It would end. It would be, this is literally the Achilles heel. It is the death blow to the entire problem. One by one. You know, again, if America got out of fiat currency and went on a treasury note, we'd become the most powerful country in world history. I mean, the most powerful financial entity. And once you have tons of your own money and we bring all of our jobs back to the United States, we no longer senselessly get everything made outside of our country. And I think China just did themselves in a big one. Remember, Japan spending $2 billion to bring everything back to Japan. Japan would be safer putting their corporations, I mean, their manufacturing factories in the United States. They know no one's going to take over the country. I mean, invade it. Plenty of workers. Boom. Solution. But then all these investment banking houses dry up. And then what's going to happen? You might think, well, they manage mutual funds and a bunch of other things, investment portfolios and stuff. Okay. Well, how's that going for everybody? It really doesn't work that well. Those agencies don't need to exist if all that money, the billions and billions of dollars that they have, that they move around, that they lose all the time, right? If it was in your pocket and my pocket, well, you know, a man only needs so much money to have an absolutely perfect life. I don't know what it is, but I'm willing to bet someone in my hometown making $50,000 a year is going to live pretty good due to the cost of living. Now, who knows if we were to take back control of the money, and because oil and gasoline is a strategic resource and we price fix that. And I know it's like, oh, free markets. Oh, fucking cry me a river, man. Free market is for a television company, a computer company, a cell phone company. They get free market because you don't have to have those things. Do you realize in New York, houses still run on oil heating? These big giant tanker trucks drive down residential neighborhoods, and they have these big giant hoses, and they come into homes and they stick it in the front and they fill your house with the fuel to keep your house warm. Another in Massachusetts, the heating system in our apartment was a water system. They had little, it was like a radiator, but it wasn't, the water was actually exposed to the air and it would pour inside this thing and you'd hear all these little metal things start tinging and tonging as they warmed up. And man, it was amazing because once it got warm, it was really cheap. It was just heating water. Non-toxic, man. Now, it's using electricity at the same time. But do I need to remind you that hydroelectric power plants were banned in 1973 because the oil company lobbied the politicians with their power so we don't make any more clean energy? No more dams. Well, we can turn that back on. There's all kinds of ways of generating electricity extremely cheap. We all know that. So my point for mentioning this overhaul of first world countries is, let me go back to the beginning problem. We have at least two-thirds of the world living in variable levels of poverty without any real civil rights. There are dozens of countries that live in violent hellholes. People that would be good, but can't be good because they're starving and their brains don't work well when you're starving, and they have to do whatever they can to survive. And because it's already happening around them, they just join the gang, so to speak, and they beg, steal, and all kinds of stuff. But if every first world country reset, got rid of all the control mechanisms that allow these bankers to control the politicians, would the psychopaths have a clear path anymore? I think not. What I'm really interested to see happen, to see if it happens, is Donald Trump gets another 4 years and continues. I bet he'll calm down a little bit, but maybe not. But he continues with this more Occam's razor, brute force solution to age-old problems, right? He's solving problems that are 70 years old. Horrible issues. And again, this is the way that society was when I was growing up, where all the males were very much like him. They're not mean unless you're messing with the system. Unless you're stealing from someone or betraying someone, then they get mean. But they're also fair in the end. Right? They're like, they'll spank you. And then it's like, you learned, right? Okay, give me a hug, shake my hand, whatever we got to do here. And go out there and make me proud of you. And then boom, you go off to get something going that's going to make that individual proud. It could be your grandmother. It could be the lady next door. Everyone raised everybody else. And there were consequences for things. I didn't realize it at first, but this whole thing about not spanking your kids, I thought it was when I was a kid. Well, I guess when I was in my 20s and I started hearing this, and of course I'm rolling my eyes because I'm thinking I was made out of the few times I had my butt smacked, you know? It was to advance this agenda to pussify the entire generation to make sure that there was no level of appreciation for anything. You just do whatever you want. You hurt someone else, yeah, that's your problem. That's sort of what all those kids turned into. Now, obviously, there are parents that don't understand the threshold of how to do it, which is why we have to educate people how to do it in a non-harmful way, meaning no physical body harm necessarily. Like, I watched my friends, literally had to watch two of my friends, they were brothers, and I went over to spend the night, and something happened. They were fighting, and their mom, who was like a taller version of the woman from Poltergeist that cleaned the house, right? She asked them, well, what happens to you when you do this? And they were like, oh, you're going to spank us with the belt. And I was like, I'm sitting over this as the first time I ever spent the night, and she literally beat the crap out of him with this belt. And, you know, they hooed and hollered, and one of them cried for a little bit. And I was shocked, you know. So there's definitely some education that has to go on in that area, too. But we don't have any consequences for anything anymore. You just get to be a big pain in the ass to society, and everyone's supposed to suck it up. And I think that's coming to an end for this particular cycle of history. But how many of you have found it utterly jaw-dropping that someone would want socialism? And then you look at all the leaders in the world that are known as the psychopath killers of the world, and it's always socialism was the first stage they went to, and then the gun grab, and then all the rights were gone, and then it was show your papers, and then it was get on the train. Then it was like even in Germany, you know, they built a couple communities in Germany before they got into major trouble with the rest of the world. Where Hitler had blonde hair, blue-eyed men and women, and they were expected to breed to increase the population. Whoa. Imagine you were 18 years or older in Germany during the war. You think you had a choice of what your career was? No. Just grab that MP40, put that outfit on, and, you know, go learn how to drive a tank, fly a plane, shoot a rifle, shoot a machine gun. and get out there and kill someone in the name of the Führer, right? But the lack of education allows for this notion that every country on planet Earth that's a communistic, socialistic country is the nemesis of everybody else. Remember, North Korea is an axis of evil. They have concentration camps in North Korea, man, for anybody who goes against the country. China has concentration camps / prisons where not only if you are a Falun Gong follower or you protest against the CCP, you go to jail. And then they negotiate your organs to millionaires around the world, and they cut you up. It's just like that skit from Monty Python back in the 70s where they showed up to get your organs because you signed a donation card, and they come and get them before you die. It's atrocious. And now they're on the preferred human rights council at the UN. Give me a break. Now, one thing I want to highlight in your mind is that there's this phenomenon that's happening with all of us, which is we wake up because of random things that happen to us, right? You see a documentary, you have a conversation with someone, you see something yourself, and then you wake up. And depending on what year you woke up, what kind of family and friends you have, you either have people that are going to wake up with you because you communicate with them, or you're going to have to reach out to new friends and you find this group. Now, the first anxiety that you have when you wake up is that you're isolated immediately. You're now seeing how they work. You're excited, but you're also a little freaked out. About it depends on, again, what you're awakened to. And the first goal is just to find someone else to talk to, which is where online happens. But then you find someone in real life, and it's 10 times as powerful to have a conversation with another human being that also has a boatload of information you don't have. And typically, you'll find someone who's typically a little bit more awake than you in some areas, then maybe you're more awake in other areas. But here's the challenge for us. Because awakening is part of a resistance to repeating history. We get too satisfied with our small little group that we don't continue reaching out to wake people up. Now, some of us at times have tried to wake people up with social media, and that is definitely effective, but it can damage more than it fixes sometimes. And sometimes you can initially have the opinion, well, screw everybody who doesn't want to listen to me. I don't want them in my life if they don't listen to me, because this stuff's important. And the challenge there is that in reality, it might just be what you presented was a little too heavy for them or a little too complex for them, and they will wake up. It's just you have to know them personally and go, okay, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And you kind of get a little sense of what they're most likely to adjust next. Like one of the simple conversations that you probably have with other people is when you, especially if you're in America, let me just say that, I would like to hear a European version or other country version of what I'm about to say and how you say it to your folks. We have the Federal Reserve here, right? I mention that all the time. So one of the icebreakers is, well, did you know that the Federal Reserve is not federal? I mean, I thought it was federal because there's the name federal in it, but it's not. It's actually a private for-profit bank. And 80% of the members are actually forbidden for us to know who they are. Did you know that? I didn't know that, you know? And you might even play super stupid, like you just learned it yesterday, to regress yourself back to their level. So the conversation is like stepping off on the moon's surface, right? It's not, flying through space and trying to land on the thing. It's just, well, it's just one more step you haven't taken yet. Let's take that one step. And then they're going to be a little addictive to like, Well, you know, and then I found out, you know, the dollar is actually only valued by the sale of a barrel of oil. And I thought it was gold backed, but it turns out, you know, Nixon took us completely off the gold standard in 73. But, you know, I was thinking about it in the Depression, Theodore Roosevelt took all the gold from everybody and shipped it to Fort Knox. So it kind of means we have crappy money. It's really weird. You know, you've seen a dollar and you pull it out, you flip it over, it says Federal Reserve note on it, and you start blowing people's minds. You regress down to their level to give them a chance. It's the same way we talk to little kids. And it's not to be demeaning or anything. It's just to make it accessible. You know, the word accessible isn't used enough in society, in my opinion. When we made video games, when I was making video games, Electronic Arts, the word accessibility was always used. And I had never heard it used like I'm about to describe it to you, but now it's like something I love to say, which is, are people going to understand the game if they're 12, 15, 25, 35, 45? If a game is really easy, like Tetris, for instance, had a lot of accessibility, well, you just kind of learn the blocks drop and you got to have enough space and they're shaped in weird ways. You got to find the socket that fits the block and there you go. Rubik's Cube, totally accessible. Whether or not you could solve it or not was a different thing. But you get a game like, Metal Gear Solid or something, and then all of a sudden accessibility goes way, way down. Fallout 4, way, way down. So when we prepare information for people, we have to think about the accessibility of how we're describing it to an individual based on who you're talking to. 85-year-old woman is going to be different than a 55-year-old man, than a 12-year-old kid. And you have to also think about their priorities in life. What do they care about? For a kid who's 16 to 18, you know, probably the number one thing I would tell a 16-year-old kid, boy, girl, doesn't matter, is to have the hobby conversation and essentially say, well, you know, and when I was a kid, you could go to four-year college and you didn't have to declare your major for the first 2 years. You did your AA equivalent inside the 4 year, and then you picked your major because you potentially walked in there with no knowledge about anything. And so you take a computer science class, you take a language class, whatever, accounting class, and you find out that you have a propensity to understand something. And now they've rigged all the 4 year colleges so that all the kids fail. Pick what you want to be in life at 18 years old with no knowledge in anything. So what I would tell a 16-year-old is like, well, what do you do to have fun? And they listen to see if there's a career in their current choices. If not, you might say, well, you know, what you might want to do, you know, don't stop doing those things that you love to do because they're awesome, even if they're not. And you say, unless it's weed, and you say, knock that shit off until you get older. And you just say, you know what, when I turned 18, I was a professional artist and I was a professional computer scientist. But I also knew how to fix electronics. I was, you know, decent mechanic for cars of that era, which is no longer the case nowadays. But, you know, just go through a litany of things that I was good at enough to then go into college and say, that's what I want to really know, you know. And just get them to say, see their life and just say, look, and the way you pitch it to them is sort of like, you want to really kick ass in life? Let me give you a little trick here. You may want to just carve yourself out some time. Try to make it more and more every day. And of course, if you love anything, you carve time out for it no matter what. But just go, look, pick a few things that lead to careers. And then when it comes time for you to move out of your house, because don't you want to get out of your parents' house? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't you want to have your own place and your own car? Yeah, oh, yeah. Totally. Total freedom, right? That sounds awesome, right? Yeah. All right. Well, go find yourself something that you love that's actually a career in the real world. Get really good at it because you have no bills right now, right? You can totally OD on this thing. One, if you even start doing that, your parents will probably start treating you a little bit better and giving you a little more leeway because, you know, they're going to have to, their fear of having to support you is going to be way, way down. Lean on them about scholarships. Say, look, if you get really good at something, you can get a full ride at any college in the world. Now, a lot of kids get into sports, just as a small digression, and that can actually fuel the scholarship that leads to the actual career, right? So I've got a lot of friends of mine that went to sports scholarships, full-blown scholarships, man, all paid for. And they didn't have good GPAs or anything, but they were good soccer players, basketball players, football players. And so they got full rides, but they ended up getting the degree in something else, right? I think humanity has been living in a very serendipitous lifestyle, meaning everything is just happening to us. We don't engineer who we are as people. There's no sense of, like, you know, self-improvement. You know, the 80s here in America, at least, and you can give me a different year for your country, if there is a different year or decade, I should say. But that's where we really had the self-help book explosion at the bookstores. And it was, you know, it was kind of like YouTube. You would go in there and go, oh my God, you look at the self-help section. You know, there's foo-foo ones that are really psychological ones, which are good too. But there was a lot of anything you wanted, man. I mean, how to learn algebra, how to learn how to fix a car, how to do anything. In the 90s, they started having these workshops where you would actually go every few days a week, or even, like, again, I can't tell you how powerful workshops are. My old co-host, Kyle, I've said this a couple times, we're in a good spot to repeat this. Here he was, he's a former punk rock star. Back in 89, he had finally finished touring with Dr. No, a band he created. You can look up Dr. No on Wikipedia. K-N-O-W. So Kyle's in there and he gets done with that, you know, and he had dominated for 10 years. He toured. It was amazing. I met him in a creative writing class. He was installing cable on telephone poles, right? Then he got a job being an ISP support guy. So he's working at an internet service provider answering tech calls, which blew my mind because I didn't know he had technical capabilities. And then he got tired of that and he was like, okay, I got a job. So I got my bills paid. Now I got to go find out what I really want to do. But what he was doing, he got a copy of Poser and Bryce. Poser was a 3D modeling application that would allow you to pose humans. And then Bryce was, you could create these incredible canyons and stuff in 3D, but you could import Poser into Bryce. And so he started creating all these amazing renderings. I name one of my companies after one of his renderings, okay? He then enrolls in a workshop in Burbank, California, living in Ventura, which that drive is probably an hour and a half with no traffic, one way. He drives into LA, Burbank, every weekend for, I think, 6 weeks or something like that. He makes a demo reel of a spaceship situation and, like I said, he took it to a special effects house that was doing Babylon 5. The guy said, that's pretty good, but go back and make these changes. He has access to the workshop computers. He does that again for another 3 months. Renders a brand new reel, takes it to the dude, gets the job. And 25 years later, he's got two Emmys for special effects. So what we are allowed to do now in terms of improving ourselves is phenomenal. And here's the funny thing. Everything he drove into Burbank to get without exaggeration, probably 10,000 times the education is at your fingertips on YouTube to learn anything you want. You want to learn how to be a plumber? You're going to have to get certified to do that, but you could pretty much learn all your plumbing online and then you just go pass the test and then you got yourself a career. Boom. But back to our topic. You know, I've done an episode, I believe, called Thinking Big. And it's one of these just basic facts of life. And I gave you another analogy, which I'll use right at this point to drive it home. Let's say that you needed $10,000 to pay for something. Pay off your debts, to buy something that's very important for you, a wedding ring or something. If you don't conceive in your brain that you need the $10,000, then you have zero chance of getting it, besides absolutely a random thing happening in your life, right? That's enough money in America in 2020. Usually random events don't happen unless you literally buy a scratch-off ticket and win, or a lottery ticket and win the lower end numbers, right? You don't get that kind of money out of thin air. But if you can conceive of it, what I like to say to people is, if it was going to be 100% difficult for you to make the 10 grand that you need, but you can't conceive of it, then you have 100% difficulty, if not an infinite level of difficulty. But the second you can conceive that you need the money, you automatically half the difficulty to get it, because now you're looking for money. You're looking for ways that you can provide services or products that can generate the cash. It might be as simple as you have a rich uncle and you're going to make the phone call and pitch them on it, and they're going to cut you a check for $10,000. There you go. But if you can't conceive of it, you won't make the phone call and you won't make the 10 grand. Why mention that? Because if we don't think big and start getting fed up with these systems that control us, then nothing is going to happen. We're going to be living in a hopeless world. But I don't think any of you are hopeless. I don't think you feel that anymore. I might hit you every once in a while. You might get pinged out where you're like, God, you know, when is this going to happen? You know, like everybody who follows the QAnon thing, or they're waiting for something to occur. That's why you don't want to be dependent on others. If, in the episode that I just recorded last night, which I'm going to put these out chronologically so I can refer to it now, if we were to give all Americans a complete and utter matrix plug into the back of your brain understanding of the Federal Reserve System and fiat currency and petrol dollars and the elite of the world that have dominated us and the whole history of the Rothschilds, at least the basic stuff that you need to know, for 350 million people, or at least 200 million people that are adults who vote, it would be done overnight, right? For 24 hours, that machine, you push the blue button and they get this thought for 24 hours. That gives them time to have conversations, to call people and go, can you believe this? I didn't know this. Yeah, me either. Why the hell do I know this? I don't know. Maybe somebody has a box with a blue button, right? Okay. Well, the blue button box was a fantasy, a box that gives everyone, in case you haven't seen the episode, it's a box that gives everyone a thought for 24 hours. It's a fictitious thing, but you write down a piece of paper what you want everyone to think. You put it inside, push the blue button, the whole world has this thought for 24 hours. But just 200 million people, just, which is only 1% of the world population, if they were to understand the cabal, the Ponzi scheme of fiat currency, it would be over for the other 99%. The torment, the tyranny, the serfdom would all be gone. Poverty would be a thing of the past. And in terms of some of the social fabrics that people fear, we know that regions of the world are very, very different from our regions, right? I like to watch at times marathon videos of these people that travel the world. Usually they're men, because you have to be a guy, I think, to pull this off and not get hurt. I'm not aware of a female doing this in any aggressive manner, but there are these guys that make, you know, chronicled videos. They're sponsored by travel agencies and they travel in all the supposed scary places. And they really do exist, man. They have to hire guards, you know, to go with them, military people with AK-47s at times. So we have seen, I have seen personally, areas of the world that you couldn't just walk in and say, you get all the first world amenities first day, because they're still violent. They're still feral. They need to have education. Well, first food, then education, and let them all calm down, right? Plus, once you get rid of the fake money and its power, then these warlords and these shilly government officials no longer make all this aid money. Remember, one of the biggest money laundering schemes in the world is aid money. So anytime you're in your country and your country says, oh, we're giving $1 billion to Brazil to help them with their whole problem down there, Venezuela, or any country you want to name. The way that deal is working in the background is that, as I've had it described to me, in most cases, some IMF, World Bank type agency is arranging the aid package. So let's just say it's $1 billion because that's pretty easy to keep in your brain. $800 million is going to go back to the agents that created the AIDS package and the aid package in the first place, and they're going to fund a bunch of dirty, dark projects, taking over other countries, trafficking drugs, buying satellites so they can spy on you. I mean, they're going to do all kinds of bad stuff with that $800 million, if they even allow them to have that. The $200 million then goes into the country and is then cannibalized by all the corrupt leaders. The people, maybe they see $10 million, maybe. Just, you know, I mean, if they're sitting around the table with these individuals, they don't give a crap about their society. They do not. They spend the least amount of money they can to keep the people off their back. But the amount of countries that I have seen that have been left sort of subjects of corporations that pollute their land, pollute their air, keep them in abject poverty, and the people don't revolt. It's amazing. But you know why? Because they don't have guns. Because they're socialistic, man. I think we have to change our standard a little bit to say, and there will come a time when this standard can relax, but it would probably be decades from today, depending how fast we can re-engineer the planet. Because there's a two-stage process I'll get into after this statement. We have to think big constantly now. Constantly. It's one thing to say we're a globalist society now because we can all communicate with each other, which is what I mean by that. So, okay, so why don't you have global thoughts? How to make the whole place better. Now, let's say that you're listening to me say this kind of stuff and you're like, dude, it won't work. And then I say, why? And you're like, because presidents get reelected in free countries. Politicians get reelected in free countries. And if that occurs, they will infiltrate once again, turn it all back on, and then we're back to where we were. They're creating the repeat of history. Aha, you're not wrong. You're absolutely right. Which is why the second phase of any re-engineering process, any draining the swamp process, is to then pass constitutional law. Or, you know, by the way, I wanted to ask you guys in your respective country what your constitution is called and sort of maybe some of the history of your constitution. So, you know, what are what's the rule document that gives you inalienable rights? And if you don't have one, that's a good first step to go for in this thinking big phase, right? But I wrote an article over 10 years ago about replacing our money. And I came up with this idea to pass because, okay, so let me just give you a crash course in one sentence. In the United States, we cannibalized Magna Carta out of 1000 AD. We created 10 Bill of Rights for our Constitution, 10 rules that we'd run this country by. As time progressed, we added more amendments to the Constitution, which required a 2/3 majority vote from our Senate and our House, signed by the president. And then we added more rules. This is where we started treating, you know, blacks properly. And unfortunately, we got the 16th Amendment, which was drafted by Flander and Knox for the bankers that were on Jekyll Island hatching this new thing. So we have a couple things that need to occur. But what we did was we said 1 through 10 was the Bill of Rights. 11 plus were the amendments. So they're all numbered. So what I said in the article was, first and foremost, we have to abolish the 16th Amendment. Because if you have a treasury note, you don't need it anymore. Gets rid of fiat currency, gets rid of the Internal Revenue Service and the police state that helps them go and steal all your stuff. And then I came up with the Zero Amendment. The Zero Amendment precedes all other amendments, precedes even free speech. And this is to go back to biblical times. And the First Amendment is very simple. It forbids compound interest and any outrageous interest. But it also says that banks can't be private anymore because it is a strategic resource. But it forbids any company on our soil, within our country boundaries, of exercising any type of compound interest. So if you owe someone money, they can't continue to churn interest on top of you. That's thinking big. And that's what we need to do. Remember that I hope this history is true. But it was said that in the time of Christ, that, you know, we had the definition of blasphemy, which was supposed to be the ultimate sin, which was to deny the existence of God. And I'm sure that there was, you know, a Jesus link to that as well, given his proximity to God and etc. But they said that there was one sin that was higher than blasphemy, and it was called usury. And usury is compound interest. Isn't it interesting that our forefathers from 2,000 years ago had seen the danger of compound interest and made it the ultimate sin? It is the mechanism by which they steal all kinds of money from us, right? Now, again, some people make the argument that compound interest is a motivating factor to get your debts down, don't run up your credit cards to maximum and all that kind of stuff. You know, we have to have some sort of incentivizing system. But as I've said in previous episodes, you have a fee for borrowing money. You do. It's a fixed rate, low rate fee. Once you cap your allotment of borrowing power, we could have something, you know, that is simply because it's a state organization. I mean, it's a, you know, federal organization, and that's the only place you can ever borrow money from. They just simply say, well, unless you can pitch us a reason why we should increase your limit, you're starting a new business, you got some new contract you just signed, and it's going to give you annuity, so we can loan you a little bit more to see that through. You can't borrow anymore. Very sorry. But once you do pay it off, you can borrow more immediately. So you have a $30,000 limit, you pay $10,000, you got $10,000 you can play with. There you go. But there's a deeper element to this whole thing, which is obviously the within a first world booming country, we develop individuals that are so out of touch with reality that in order to get their vote for the things that are very serious in reality, you can't get them to pay attention. You know, the derogatory definition of these people would be mouth breathers and deer-eyed people. They're not bad people. They just don't have any knowledge of the world because the education for them is sadly the standard that it is today. You know, it's the Every Child Left Behind regiment of Common Core in the United States. What's really interesting about things like Common Core is that they really do pitch you a solution that is on paper at the high-level definitions, right? It's never the low-level implementation levels, but the high-level implementation sounds fantastic. It actually is. The United States of America should not have a different school system in Massachusetts as it does in Kansas. I personally experienced a massive disparity between the two. Massachusetts was off the chain complicated. Kansas was very meat and potatoes. You got the education I had. I got to be a professional coder at 18, so it wasn't bad. I don't know what the computer science thing would have been in the Massachusetts because computers weren't really being taught yet in high schools or junior highs at the time because you just didn't have the computers to teach kids on. I'm sure it's very complicated, but the amount of friends I have that were born and raised in Massachusetts who have PhDs is way higher than other areas of the country. Okay, so we should be able to find for each respective country a common core. Now, I'm assuming that it's much easier if your population is smaller. You know, one of the things that Americans, and I'm guilty of it too, that we forget is that, you know, we're 350 million, 365 or something like that here in America, right? Well, countries in Europe are, some of them are 40, 60. I mean, Tokyo has more people living in their city of Tokyo in Japan than some countries have for their entire population. Well, there's an advantage the smaller that your country is. Think about what I'm saying here. I am having to, in my math, my ad hoc math in this episode, I'm saying that we have to have, you know, for a clean win, 200 million of the 365, let's say, on the same page with the Federal Reserve in order to get rid of it impulsively. Just boom, it's gone. Well, what if you're in a country that only has 60 million people? That's fantastic, isn't it? I think Europe totaled is twice the amount of America. So there's quite a few people there. And because of the EU, and you're fighting a whole thing, you have a big problem. You have cultural differences between countries. And then you have to, you know, get all those different borderline folks together. I mean, the Germans are going to have to convince the French and the Spanish and the Italians and, you know, any other country that's got a lot of people. Guys, we can't continue this. This EU thing is not working. And we're pretty sure they had a hand in the local, or the current problem we have in 2020. World Health Organization is lying about a pandemic, lying on every single level, you know, trying to keep it concealed so it spreads, trying to throw every single body type in it, you know, or death type in it to make sure the numbers go exaggerated up. These agencies are not the slightest bit interested in our prosperity. Quite the opposite, which is why they have their program, Agenda 21. It's not there to help you. It's there to you have about a 97 to 99% chance of being killed by them in some way, shape, or form. Some 99% virus or whatever. But they want you in poverty. Look what they just did. Look what they just did. They halted the entire world economy. The IMF came out today on the 14th, let's just say, of April 2020, and said that the whole world is going to experience a 3.5% negative growth until 2021. And then they said, of course, they have nothing to do with any of us, to be honest. You know, our willpower to create and make money is not up to them. It's up to us. You know, you could create a YouTube channel tomorrow and put some really wild content on it and you're reaping the dough. And you start selling a product, start selling t-shirts and books and speaking circuits and whatever. You could invent a product for a car and make, you know, whatever, gobs and gobs of money. They don't control us. So we shouldn't let their words mean anything to us. But they just try, they're going to be trying to create a sucking sound to stop us from getting powerful through money. I mean, these people that make these documentaries that are just thrown on YouTube, or I don't even know where they air outside of YouTube, that really educate us on what's going on in the world so we can have at least a firsthand perspective of what individuals are experiencing and the suffering that they're going through. If they have no money, then they can't run around and inform us. Okay, well, they're pushing to get it, and we got to fight back, like I've been saying. I think what we are lacking in this sort of transformational phase that I'm describing is we really are yet to have a package that's as clean as their fraud called climate change, right? They've got a clean package for that fraud, and they've put billions into paying off, you know, shilly scientists to get their, you know, their grants, you know, their money. And so these people will say anything. And then they do indoctrinate people that just, again, or they're more in that category of climatology, they're mouth breathers. And so they're like, oh, okay. Is that, oh man, it's going to all melt. Okay. Well, I'll put it in my script. I'll put it in my television show. I'll talk to my friends. I'll chastise my friends if they don't believe you. I said a long, long time ago, hundreds of episodes ago, that I was in a car once, and it was my girlfriend's mom was in the back seat, And I forgot what she was talking about. And I wasn't awake. This was in the 90s. And I heard this sort of, I was trying to play a Trump card over the conversation, not to do with Donald Trump, but the old, you know, card game, Trump card theory. And it was something about NASA saying something. And again, I was not awake towards anything I've ever talked about NASA at the time, but whatever she was saying sounded like bullshit. And I remember listening, and then, because it was my girlfriend's mom, so you got to be kind of careful with that situation. I remember listening, and I don't think I replied or said anything in response, but it was, I was questioning, you know, further what she was saying. And then her trump card that she threw down was, well, it came from a guy at NASA, so, you know, it's got to be true. Something to that effect. And I remember, without having any super negative feelings towards NASA at the time, feeling like that was a bullshit way to end a conversation. It was a way to throw down, well, you're not allowed to question anything that's going on in this conversation because I said that NASA said it, you know. I was like, we do that too much. Again, we're just watching a video, or several videos today at the lounge about this backlash that Bill Gates is having, right? He has a Twitter feed full of thousands of comments calling for his immediate death. I mean, execution. And they were talking about cutting his head off, hanging him from the gallows, electric chairs, everything. It's all over the web. I'm sure you guys have seen it if you're paying attention. 20 years ago, I bought a book called Guerrilla Marketing. I think that's the name of the book. It's a black book, black cover, whatever. And I got through it, and it was essentially telling you, the reader, that in order to build a company into a powerful franchise, if you can, you should build up an icon within the company. And it was calling out, I believe, Steve Jobs as an example. You know, Steve Jobs earned his reputation, right? And so did Steve Wozniak up to a point, but Wozniak left really early. But Steve Jobs, you know, he was just revered for being an original thinker and really massaging other people's ideas into commercial products. A lot of people have great ideas, but they can't quite polish it to be perfect, you know? But think about it, you know, Henry Ford, Sam Walton, the guy from Wendy's, you know, they were all in there saying, look, these people built up personalities such that you fall in love with the person that runs the company, Martha Stewart, Oprah Winfrey. And it's they get to a point where they can't do anything wrong. And I even watched, you know, the Super Bowl this year had that, I believe it was J-Lo and Akira, is that her name? And, you know, Kira walks up and does the goat tongue thing, total devil worshiping move. Whether or not she knows that's what she's doing or not, it makes no sense for this beautiful girl to stick out her tongue and flap it like a goat does. I mean, it's like, exactly. It's just eerie and weird. J-Lo, she's just an entertainer. And I'm not sure she's in any cabal or anything, but past performances have been littered with just all kinds of symbology and crazy stuff, right? And so when the critique comes out about these celebrities engaging in these activities, I've heard it in my own circles. People I'm dating will say, oh, come on, you know, give me a break. She's just singing music. And I'm like, you think so? You really think so? You know, what is it? Miley Cyrus and her whole tongue thing. Again, full on devil worshiper, man. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't believe in the devil. I don't believe in a Satan. I believe in evil people and evil deeds. But if someone thinks that they're aligning with darkness, it's what could their objectives be? You know? So that is one paradigm that we can start breaking down, that just because you get popular, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Bill Nye the douchebag guy, who's a 100% actor, 0% scientist, right? I'm sure he's learned a lot over the course of his life, and he could probably school any one of us on something that he's presented that we haven't studied. But they get to the point where these people are sort of indefensible. Like, they can't be critiqued in any way, shape, or form. And Bill Gates got himself from his sociopathic past of being the absolute bona fide revenge of the nerd dude, which is nothing wrong with that. He steals DOS from IBM, calls it MS-DOS, and everyone thinks he invented it. He steals the GUI from Steve Jobs, who paid Xerox $110 million in stock for that privilege to use the GUI. He doesn't have to pay anything. He rips it off. They smuggle Project Echelon out of the 80s into the Windows platform to be the greatest spying operating system on planet Earth. And so then he, you know, moves up to the point he leaves the company. And then he's a multi-billionaire. And the amount of comments that I've heard from people, and there's a great phenomenon going on, which leads into this on my social networking stuff. But the people defending him as a good man, and he's such a great guy and all this other stuff, they know nothing about his TED talk, you know, claiming he's going to reduce the world population 10 to 15% using vaccinations. I mean, how's that work, right? But now he got all the way up to the peak of really reengineering his personality with everyone to be this Gandhi of contribution and philanthropy. And in 1 month, he just moved from hero to zero, because he will continue to be hated for the rest of his life. The group of people that dislike this man is only going to get bigger between now and his death. It's over for that dude. It is over. Mark my words, man. So here's something that's going on that I think is really cool in terms of the wake-up theme. By the way, Barack Obama came out and said that Joe Biden's going to usher in a great awakening. Ha ha ha. Yeah. You're going to learn all about dementia during this presidential campaign. Anyway, I can definitely say to the guys, which is 95% of my audience, for you ladies, this is actually, you're probably one of these people in some way, shape, or form. But a woman on, you know, Facebook who posts, you know, a series of attractive photographs of herself. You know, some of them are just beautiful profiles. Some of them are full body because they're at that age they can do that. They always get a bunch of renegade dudes. And, you know, every once in a while you'll see them post comments like, hey, don't message me, you know, just because I let you into my friend group, because, you know, I'm not interested. I'm married. I don't harvest my boyfriends or husbands from social media. But they get a lot of like stragglers, right? That don't have anything to do with their life personally. And what's been fascinating in this last month and a half is that I have several very attractive friends in both sides of the camp, but definitely in the female side of things, just happens, right? And they have been posting lucid posts about the fraud of this whole thing. Even folks that I would never imagine, who are nurses, okay, who are, you know, God-fearing Christian women, would never swear in a conversation. You know, you would think that they were more willing to go with the trends of what people are saying, are posting anywhere from, this is a complete fraud, Bill Gates should get AIDS and die, or something like that. I've seen, you know, they should get COVID. Hope he gets COVID and he dies. I mean, I've seen posts like that from these women. And then all these guys are like completely shocked, you know, the ones that are completely asleep, which isn't a lot, but there's enough that these women are leveraging their attraction instead of having to fend off guys trying to send them inappropriate pictures or whatever. They are now body slamming the consciousness of all their followers with lucidity. And it's amazing. But one of my friends who's an absolute sweetheart, and again, the last person on planet Earth I would have ever imagined to take any tiny baby step towards this being a conspiracy, she just posted one of the most gentle, beautiful, highly accessible posts about the fact that she is not seeing anything related to the panic that's going on, and she's a registered nurse. Super cool. I tell you that because, you know, one of the things that I think that maybe we don't do enough is to itemize how much we're winning at any point in time with this whole thing. And, you know, it's easy when you don't take inventory of how much you're winning to think that you're losing, or that it's a hopeless situation, or, man, it's just too much stuff that needs to change. And, you know, if you are 20 years old and you're going to live to be 80, 60 years might be enough. But if you're 50, 60, 70, you're thinking, geez, even if I do everything right between now and the time I die to change the world to a better place, I may or may not see it. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I just was watching this funny special on musicians that have lost limbs or had some. They put Paul Stanley in there. He has a deformed right ear that he always covered up with his hair. I had a childhood friend that had the same thing. But they talked about Jim Croce. And I think I have his history correct in that here he is making, you know, Leroy Brown and all these crazy, amazing songs out of the 70s that, even though he died in a plane accident, but he became popular after he died. And there's a few people like that where they never really saw any money while they were alive. I think Van Gogh is one of them, but they made all of their, they got all their notoriety and fame after the fact. Even the Mona Lisa wasn't famous until someone stole the thing at one point, and then it became the most popular thing ever. So, you know, some of us are going to have to contribute at that level. We don't know when our ticket's going to get punched. So it's like one of those things, if I told you, you know, or God came down and told you, not me, but God comes down and tells you, you know, in the next year, you're going to be up here with me. Don't worry. You won't suffer, but you're going to be up here with me. This is a really awesome place, by the way. But why don't you take your last year of life and make it really worthwhile? And then how would you live your life different? You know, like Steve Jobs said at his graduation speech at Stanford, he said, you know, I live every day like it's my last. Because at that point in time, he had recovered from his pancreatic cancer. Mysteriously, he wanted to sue Google and he got it again. So keep that in mind as you think about how much you're participating in this game. You know, and again, if you get overwhelmed, like I've said in other episodes, you don't have to be on the front lines every day. If you got too much going on, you just pull back. Someone else will take your spot. People are waking up every single day. And by the way, when you do pull back, this is something that happens to me in all things that I do, but definitely in screenwriting. You know, when you write a script, you know, it takes, typically a really good script will take usually 6 months to 2 years to design before you ever hit the screenwriting software. You're writing all right, but you're not writing in screenwriting software. You're designing the turns and the twists and all that kind of stuff. And when you write outside of a contract to get something done, I've done both on numerous occasions, you worry about taking a break once you get to the screenwriting phase. Even if you got other scripts, you're worried that you won't finish it, that you'll lose your mojo for that particular script. And that's happened to me as well. Because I got a comedy I'm working on trying to finish, and I wrote it, 10 years ago, at least, probably 12 years ago now. And I was really in the pocket of the comedy, and I pulled out. Now I reread it and I'm laughing my head off, and I'm like, God, I got to get my brain back into this flow of how this comedy is supposed to sound, you know? But I now intentionally, having written several scripts, I now intentionally take 2 weeks off from any script. Even if I don't have another idea that's going to be hot and something I'm working, I take 2 weeks off, and it's a miracle. And this is what can happen to you if you take time off from the front lines. And I don't know how many of you consider yourself on the front lines, but some of you are at that level. You'll have a chance to rethink everything that you know to be true, and you will do what I call distill. You'll distill down your entire pitch for a particular topic. And this happens naturally anyway. You know, for those of you who've ever had to explain fiat currency, NASA, the shape of the earth or whatever, you have at the beginning of the journey, you have like hours and hours and hours of conversation to communicate the idea. Then you, a year goes by and you've had the conversation so many times. Hey, it's a couple pages of conversation. Then it's a couple paragraphs. Then it's a few sentences. And what's interesting is as you reduce the amount of words that you speak, it becomes more potent and more powerful. It's like a rich candy. It just hits you like a ton of bricks. It's a beautiful thing. So I'd be interested in your thoughts. You know, to summarize, let's put it this way. What I'm saying to you is if one first world country can get rid of all this corruption, and America is in a good position to pull this off, your country might as well, might in addition, be at that point. Do let me know about that. But I think that once one big giant first world country starts to kick ass and take names with a big population, especially, then the rest will follow because they'll get jealous of the power and quite economically may have to follow to stay economically viable in the world. I think that will trickle down to the rest of the world and will potentially fix this place. But let me know if you agree with that hypothesis. If you don't, or you have additional modifications to it or other priorities, definitely lay it down in the comments because I want to hear your thought process because I am distilling at this point the entire pitch of how we can end this ridiculous cycle. I think that for anything that we couch, anything that's horrible that we get rid of, we have to pass laws at the constitutional level that makes it stick out like a sore thumb if anyone tries to bring it back. One of the things that I wrote in my document about replacing the money with sovereign money was that we need to at least deflate the amount of money that it takes to buy anything by, how do I say this, 10x. So for instance, if you made $100,000 a year, you now make $10,000 a year because everything you need to buy fits in that $10,000 envelope, just exactly like it did for $100,000. And why is that? Because, you know, one of the crude analogies is dropping a penny should mean something to you because that can buy something. A penny can actually buy something. A quarter can buy something. A dollar can buy something. Make every unit you have in your possession very valuable. But there's a lot of money laundering schemes out there. There's a lot of siphoning embezzlement schemes out there that rely on the fact that money is inflated. For instance, let's say a burrito restaurant makes $3 million a year. Okay, they get a corrupt cash register person, accountant, whatever. Someone has access to the money. And they're stealing out of that cash register a little bit of money all the time. And it doesn't show up on the books because the numbers are so massive that when they steal that extra buck out of the thing, you don't notice it. But now what if you could buy a burrito for a dime instead of a buck? Losing a dime would mean something now. And so corruption, I think by design, would be at least inhibited a little bit by deflating the money, the amount of currency required to buy the same exact items. So little things like that could police and marshal things. We have to put in regulations against corruption and not regulations against living. Anyway, let me know what you think. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's 2 video, 2 audio, 4 social media. It's a great locked Facebook group. Please get up there. There's a couple ways to donate, but again, we're in a bad situation at this point, so don't worry about it. There's a store if you want a chat ski or two. There is a all-new remastered season 1 in its own channel. Until next time, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.